Welcome to Difference Makers. I'm your host, Adam Van Brimmer. On today's podcast, Healthy Savannah's Paula Kreisler talks about changing a community's culture through diet and exercise, avoiding that poison that is sugar, and baling hay on her family's farm as a child. The Difference Makers podcast is brought to you by an organization making a major difference in our community, the Savannah Economic Development Authority. Their names, you know the organizations and businesses they lead. You might even know their faces, but do you know why they are difference makers? This is Difference Makers, a podcast presented by the Savannah Economic Development Authority and dedicated to highlighting Savannah's key players and their contributions to our community. Difference Makers hail from several sectors, including commerce, government, education, arts and culture, and philanthropy. I'm Adam Van Brimmer, editorial page editor of the Savannah Morning News and SavannahNow.com. Thank you for listening. To meet Paula Kreisler is to know Paula Kreisler. She's the director of Healthy Savannah, a coalition of local stakeholders working to make the Savannah area a healthier place to live. She's also one of those unique individuals who puts everyone she meets at ease, even if she does look askance at your lunchtime meal choices. That just makes her all the more endearing. Just make sure you hide those office treats when she comes around. Put out a bowl of fruit instead. She's also an unquestioned difference maker in our community as she inspires us all to live healthier and set an example for others. Pleased to be joined on Difference Makers this week by Healthy Savannah's Paula Kreisler, who has a number of initiatives going. I know she's got a busy April and May and the summer ahead, but before we dig into things like the lecture series and some of the other things that Healthy Savannah has going on, we typically start these difference makers with learning a little bit more about our subject. And Paula, I know just from doing some prep with you, you have a very interesting background and healthy. I don't want to say that it's cliche, but you grew up on a dairy farm.
I
and
did.
That contributed to your outlook on health. Can you kind of talk
Absolutely.
About how you grew up?
All right, Adam. Thank you. So, yes, I did grow up on a dairy farm in the Midwest in Missouri. I've got with six brothers and sisters. And so that basis in life really gave me obviously, I was very physical active all the time. And we had a massive garden. So I had a really solid base for growing up. A lot of people don't have that these days. And so I'm grateful for that. I actually some days still miss it. But my favorite time is still to be outside, because that's where I spent the majority of time. You know, you go inside to sleep and maybe do some homework, and that was it. So and I still enjoy going back and being part of that. But something propelled me out of Missouri, way back when. I have got my undergraduate degree back in at a Lutheran university in Nebraska, Concordia University. Gone on since then to get my CPA certificate when I was in New Orleans, and then my MBA while I have been here in Savannah. So that's a little of my educational background. But one of the big things that, again, shifted me culturally, so you can imagine the life of growing up on a very, Midwestern Protestant rural community, and that's exactly what it was in the 60s and 70s. And but then right after college, I took a six-month trip through Europe with a youth hostel card and a backpack and student rail passes, and really opened my eyes to all the cultural differences and how to really work together with people. So I went into a health food store in Houston, Texas. That's where I moved when I came back from, because I had some good friends there that offered me a place to stay while I looked for a job and that I graduated with. And so I went in one day in 1975 and picked up this book called Sugar Blues. And I read that book, and it's by William Dufty. You can still get it on Amazon. But it basically said sugar is poison. And that just shifted. I mean, I didn't know, sugar was a treat when I was growing up. I mean, we got a bottle of RC Cola maybe once a month, you know, on the dairy farm. And, you know, we did have sweet tea, so I was familiar with all that. But who knew that it was just not good for you? We didn't know that. Now, the science was there to say that it was bad for you, but then that's what the book basically says. The science says it's poison, it's going to kill you. There's all kinds of stories about that. You can read the book yourself. And then I just started reading more and more. I started reading about healthy eating, physical activity, and the impact that all of that has on our long-term health. And so for literally decades, I was the health nut out there. I would just go, you know, Adam, you'd come up and talk to me, and I would talk to you about healthy eating and being active. I just would do that. And everybody knew me as that person. And every time anybody had some kind of health issue that they thought could be addressed through healthy eating, or it wasn't working through the medical world. I mean, and I don't have any, you know, degrees in anything. I just am now very well read. I've seen a lot of films. There's a lot of books out there. There's a lot of actually stuff out there that's that really misleads you down a wrong path. So there's just a lot of information, and I will just shift to the end of where I am now, because I've changed my eating patterns over the last 40 plus years. I adapt them each time with each thing that I read. Now, my physical activity is still, I walk a lot. I still just get out there and walk, and I love doing that. And I love traveling still. So those two things combined help keep me physically active. I still, you know, take the stairs instead of the elevator, you know, stuff like that. So now what I do from a eating perspective is that I eat a whole food plant-based diet. There is tons of research behind how healthy people are around that. So I don't take supplements anymore. A long time ago, I used to take them by the handfuls because I thought that was the way to help make me healthy. And I don't do that anymore. I take, I just have a whole food plant-based diet. And so that's what I do. So a lot of people say vegan. Well, vegan is one thing, but you can be really sick eating vegan food because guess what? Sugar is vegan.
Right.
And a lot of people go, oh, yeah, I want a vegan cupcake. I'm like, that is not doing yourself any favors whatsoever. So that's kind of how, you know, life is. I'm still, you know, I have, I love my family. My mama turned 90 last year. A lot of people in town came to a big birthday party we had. I brought her in from Missouri. She comes every year. And a lot of people know this too. They follow my Facebook page, and I just do Where's Mama posts. Uh-huh. So Where's Mama? We every year we go to the Tybee Lighthouse and climb to the top. And so at 90, and it takes us a little longer each year, but she still does it every year. We've been doing it since we've moved here, and that was like 15 years ago to Savannah. So
you mentioned sugar blues. How yep. long has it been since you had something with added sugar in it?
Hmm. Well, I will.
At least purposefully. I've heard a date. Or a year, anyway.
Well, purposely. Well, of course, so Adam, I'll just, you know, I call it follow my own sword, but if I go home and, you know, mama makes sweet tea, I'm going to have some sweet tea. I'm not going to lie to you.
Okay.
And people will see me, and I'll even post it online. You know, I do, when people come to town, we do go to Leopold's, and I'll have a very small half scoop of ice cream. I will do that.
That makes more sense.
Yeah.
But on a day-to-day basis, sugar's not part of your diet.
So. Not at all.
Where are you getting sugar? Are you getting natural sugars? Are you eating carbs that your body produces as sugars? Or how are you?
So the big thing that I do is I eat fruit through the morning. So whether it's a banana, and then around 10, I'll do like a couple blueberries. And maybe 30 minutes later, I'll slice up an orange. I eat the orange peel and the orange together because I just like that. I like it that way. Those are kind of my three main fruits that I eat. And then after that...
No
sweet things like muffins and you know, I don't know.
No. I want to go back to the farm for a second. Now, I grew up in a rural area as well. My parents were both blue collar factory workers, but my grandparents on both sides were farmers.
So yep.
I spent a fair amount of time on the farm. They didn't have cows, but I know you're probably an expert at pulling udders.
Yes.
And also you mentioned baling hay.
Yes.
Is there anything worse in the world than bailing out?
That's a hard job. No, I don't think so, Adam.
Dirty? It scratches you up.
It's because when you bale hay, it's the summertime, mm-hmm. and it's hot. But you have to wear leather gloves, you have to wear a shirt, long sleeve, heavy duty shirt down to your wrists, and you have to have on heavy duty jeans and a hat, and it's hot out there, the bales are heavy, and you have to stack them up, and you just sweat a lot, so you drink a lot of water. And then you have to turn around once you've got them loaded on the wagon, then you have to turn around and go help the rest of the folks, then stack them in the barn. And the barn, of course, you know, when you're putting them way up top, heat rises. Yeah. And so putting stuff up at the top of, you know, way up at the top is just brutal, brutal work. And yeah, that I don't think I've done anything harder in my life than baling hay in the summertime.
I'm allergic to everything. And when I was a kid, I had asthma. And when it was hail baling time, it was just...
Yeah.
It was like cruelty to children.
Yeah, yes.
But, you know, it's okay. The past, I survived. So you mentioned coming to Savannah and getting involved with Healthy Savannah. Otis Johnson was obviously a driver behind that.
Yes.
Can you kind of talk about those early days and the whole idea? I imagine some people kind of looked at you askance, like, why are you bothering? What are you actually trying to accomplish? What were some of the early challenges?
Sure. Former Mayor Otis Johnson, who is really still... mentor is one way to put it, I suppose, but I respect him so much for his vision and his heart and what he pragmatically puts into place to help the community along. You know, anybody in a political role is going to take, grief from lots of directions, period. But I will just say this is one thing that... that I am just couldn't be more appreciative of. And for those that don't know, he actually in 2006 had a heart attack, and it was a pretty bad one. And he's like, well, if this can happen to me, this can really happen to anybody in my community. And then that was the reason for planting the seed of Healthy Savannah. So on the positive side, because it was the mayor, he was able to get a whole bunch of local leaders in a room together to help say, well, what does a healthy Savannah look like? And my friend Liz Ann Roberts, who I did not know at the time, she was the one tapped by the mayor to help facilitate these meetings. We had them at the Civic Center and one of the big in the ballroom, and we got some work done. We did, but it was that and I call him Dr. J now. So what he says is, you know, you have, and we would do this, forming, storming, norming. And so there was a lot of storming because we have a lot of programmatic work happening here in the community. And so people thought that we were trying to come in and be the be-all programming organization in the community. And that is not it at all. And so in an essence, when people say, well, what is Healthy Savannah? I just say Healthy Savannah is a social movement. We're not a program. We're not a project. We want the healthy choice to be easy for everyone in our community, regardless of their ability, their age, their income level, or their neighborhood. And that's what we want. And we do that through something that is foreign to a lot of people. We do that, but people that know Healthy Savannah know this is the space we work in, policy, systems, and environmental change. We have a very long list of policy options that things and ordinances that have changed since Healthy Savannah's been in existence. We've had very successful campaigns around smoke-free air, around complete streets, around farm trucks, around school design guidelines, around there's a long list of accomplishments that we that have made healthier choices easier for our community. So, but that initial, you know, the pushback initially was, you know, first from the programmatic folks, like thinking, well, what about, this is not a true example, but let's just say Girls on the Run. They're out there working with the girls in Chatham County, and it's an awesome program.
My daughter was in it at one point.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. So the work that we get done, we do it through social movement takes organizations and people. It doesn't happen with just Paula or Lizanne or Otis Johnson. saying this is what we want. It happens when you get a whole bunch of people together, like the Savannah Morning News. And we have a lot of friends here at the paper, and I'm just grateful for this opportunity to, you know, because we feel like we have been making a difference for a long time, and while we know we have, for example, with smoke-free air, just one of those, the data now, 8 years later, from 2011 when it was implemented to 2019, the deaths and death rates due to heart attack and heart disease have plummeted in Chatham County. Like 36%, and that is just a huge medical, it happens, and that's, I'm trying to think of the right word here to say. It's like, so it's a huge impact, positive impact in our community. But all obviously that was not meant with just everybody just open arms, because right. How do you tell a party city to stop, you know, to have all indoor public spaces smoke-free? How do you do that? Well, you know, we built the campaign, Breathe Easy. We had pushback, but we had folks on our team that, you know, we followed the process of, you know, we came and met with the editors here at the paper, and so we had constant input into the media world. We didn't leave any voids where people can just fill in, and so, but it's hard even there. I will just say that while we called it, you know, smoke-free air, mm-hmm. every media outlet still wanted to call it a smoking ban.
Right.
And so we're trying to shift the language to call it smoke-free air. But still, so that's just that, you know, you just have to meet that and go, okay, well, that's what it is. But still, to this day, you can go around town and you will see stickers on doors that say Breathe Easy, and it'll have the cigarette with a red circle and slash through it. So that campaign is still kind of alive and well. And the health department still goes out and, you know, every once in a while something creeps up and somebody's like, people were smoking there. So while there were those barriers, clearly, and then we didn't get a unanimous vote on city council when we first went to city council, but it was 7-2 vote, and that's what it was. And so that obviously gets it into law. Chatham County followed suit. Actually, theirs was unanimous at that level. Pooler put it on their ballot in 2014, and it was passed 80-20, the same very strong smoke-free air ordinance that includes e-cigarettes and vaping. And so now Georgia Regents, the whole university system is smoke-free. Of course, the hospitals are smoke-free. The housing authority is smoke-free. The school district implemented a very strong smoke-free air ordinance. So that's what you call a social movement. Mm-hmm. Nothing happening for years in that area. Now Savannah started, and people still call on Savannah to help them do their thing. So I know you're asking about the obstacles, but you're going to meet them, you know, like right now, you know, I'll go out on a big limb and say it would be great, because there's a lot of communities passing sugary beverage sales tax, right? Putting a tax on sugary sweetened beverages, and then taking those funds and applying to positive health spaces, yes, and they're working. But you know, we have to be honest. We live in Georgia, and it's the land of a sugary beverage, you know, home of that. I'm not going to call out names, but just but they're here, and we just, you know, why it's like it's not it's probably not a good time to start that campaign, but eventually it will come here too, because people are going to see. It's like people want to be happy and healthy, Adam. That's what people want. And what we have to do is help make those choices easier for them to do that. And so easier, if something's more expensive, then maybe they won't buy it.
Or if Michael Bloomberg says no 32, no beverages over a certain size when he was in.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. Yes.
After the initial furor, it seemed to kind of die down.
Exactly. And then when he did the same thing with smoke-free air. And I talked to a nurse that was in New York, and she was like, the impact was immediate. Their ER visits just like fell off the wagon. They had to just drop staffing at the ER simply because of the smoke-free air that Bloomberg implemented.
Interesting. So you have a little bit of Healthy Savannah's Super yes. Bowl's coming up with the lecture series.
Yes.
I'm not even going to attempt to name it because I'm going to butcher it, so I'm going to let you name it.
Sure. So we're excited. This is going to be our sixth year of the In Market and Healthy Savannah Encourage Health Educational Series. And so, so I love that. The name of it, Encourage Health, because that's exactly what we're trying to do. And every year we have four different lectures. They're free and open to the public, however, and they includes a free lunch, but you have to register. And I'll just say that right now while people are like tuned in, healthysavannah.org, you will see the Encourage Health logo on our website, and you just click on there and you can register. The first one, so let me just go through the detail and then I'll talk a little more about registration. So there was a press release that did go out that identified the dates and the topics, but they have shifted around. And so the first lecture that's coming up on April the 30th is it's Cleveland Beach, and he's going to talk about meditation and stress relief. And I've known Cleveland for a long time. I had no idea that this was a space that he lived in, and so that's what we're really excited to have that. Our next one is on June 25th. So after Cleveland on the 30th, and you have to again go to the website and register. And then on June 25th, we will have Desiree Suggs, who's going to be speaking about food insecurity issues in Savannah. And everybody knows that we have a lot of folks doing food banks and Backpack Buddies and Blessings in a Book Bag and all those kinds of things, because we have a real serious issue with our having people in food deserts. And she's done some research on that, and she's that is going to happen on June 25th. So I'll just back up. So on the date that Cleveland speaks, on April 30th, that's the day that the registration then will be open for Tuesday, June 25th. And these, by the way, these are all Tuesdays. They're 2 months apart. It's always the last Tuesday of these 4 months, April, June, August, and October. Then August 27th is Dr. Mike Vaughn is going to be talking about facts and fiction of CBD oil. And I know everybody is very interested in that topic, because everybody wants to know is, well, you know, yeah, it's getting a lot of press, but well, what does it do? And so he's going to be talking about that. So I know that one's going to.
And by then we'll know about the legislative changes that have,
yes,
that
we
have
will.
Been passed that are being waited, they're waiting to sign in.
Exactly.
I imagine when they actually, the law will be broad. And after the law is signed, or after the bill is signed into law, then we'll get a little more details on how they're actually going to execute.
And that may have played into when they placed this as well.
Right.
You know, when initially it was going to be the initial presentation, because we know everybody wants to hear about it, but that will make a whole lot more sense. And the final one is October 29th, and it's going to be Katie Balthrop. She's going to be talking about the importance of strength tank training at any age. And I'm, you know, very familiar with that. It's like, so a lot of people like, oh, I'm older, you know, this is just for young people, is go out there and strength training, not necessarily weight training, but strength training. And one of the exciting things now is that we are now at the Charles Morris Center for this year's Encourage Health Series. We've not ever been there before. This, again, our sixth year. And the capacity at that building, we've pretty much been limited to 100 people, and we always are at capacity. We always are. We get there for the last at least 2 years. We have filled up the space and had people on a wait list. Well, we can double that capacity now, and we are ready for that. So we're going to have the opportunity for up to 200 people to be in that room together.
Let's kick Paula out of the studio for a minute so producer Zach and I can eat some cookies and talk about the Savannah Economic Development Authority. When it comes to difference makers in our area, the team at CETA is pushing to make Savannah a great place to work and live. CETA is committed to creating, growing, and attracting jobs and investment in the Savannah region. Whether you're a business looking to relocate to Savannah or an existing business ready to grow and expand, CETA is the centrifuge of your propeller, making the connections, helping to propel the business to success. Learn more about the Savannah Economic Development Authority and what they do in the Savannah community by visiting CETA.org. So you're not organizing lectures. I know you, we've had it in the paper. You recently received a very large grant from the CDC about REACH, and it focuses on a couple of key areas. Can you kind of walk us through what that's about?
Sure. So, yes, this is one of the most exciting things that's happened in the healthy Savannah world. And I mean, we've been, again, I said earlier, we've been doing some great work. And so in the summer, we applied for a big federal grant called, it's from the CDC, Center for Disease Control. It's called REACH, Racial and Ethnic Approaches to Community Health. The grant required a very strong coalition with success behind them in the policy systems and environmental change arena, which we have. It also required somebody that could handle a minimum of $500,000, $500,000 every year for 5 years. And so we partnered with the YMCA of Coastal Georgia, whom we have partnered with in the past, Healthy Savannah now has a much healthier bank account than it did way back when there was a couple hundred dollars in it, you know. But so the YMCA, actually, the funds go through them because we are getting $3.4 million over 5 years. The strategies that the CDC says that we are going to be, that work best to impact our approaches to community health. They want us to focus on our low-income priority African-American population. In some cities across the country, that population is different. It could be Asian, it could be Hispanic, just depending on where it is. And I will say, too, Adam, that there were over 250 applicants nationwide, and 31 were selected, and I still get goosebumps just going, wow, this is pretty awesome stuff, because it's the grant really supports the work that we do, and now we're just going to really, over the next 5 years, we were awarded the grant late last fall, and so we've got 5 years from that date to lift up our community. So I was talking about the strategy areas that get focused on. The one that they gave us four choices, the one we didn't pick, and I've already talked about this, is the tobacco area, because they see that as a really important strategy. Well, we've got a pretty solid green check mark there. The other three, nutrition, which we are making progress on, but we have so much work to do. That's probably one of our heaviest areas. Physical activity is the next one. And the third one is called community clinical linkages. And the best way to describe that is how many times you hear people that need services go, I didn't know. Mm-hmm. I didn't know, I didn't know. So we're trying to eliminate the I didn't know.
Raise awareness.
Exactly. And so if I'm the person with that needs the services, whether it's a medical service or if I need to know about Girls on the Run, let's just say you're the doctor and Kyle is working with a nonprofit but has a service that I need, like Girls on the Run, then you'd both know about each other, and you can direct me to each other, mm-hmm. and I know how to find you if I need you. So that trying, and that's a hard task. It's not an easy thing to do. So we've got we're building a big database mm-hmm. now. The African American Health and Information Resource Center out of St. Joseph's Candler is one of our contractors with REACH around that. So building that up, and then we're also learning. Then now, once we get a database, not everybody, not like, well, how are you going to get to the database? Well, we're going to figure out how to take what we know to the folks that need to know. And so that's going to be huge throughout this grant. So and then the things that we're going to be learning and doing in the nutrition and physical activity world, let's do the nutrition piece first. And so has four main areas. One is around institutional policy changes, like at the hospitals, to implement higher nutrition standards in their procurement policies and at their vending machines and at their snack bars. And then also we've got a big component around our faith and health community and trying to build Healthy Savannah has a faith and health coalition. We've been in, it's about 3 years going on now, but this grant now will propel that work. We're doing, there's a training called Faith Activity and Nutrition, and we all got trained on how to train faith-based organization committees, so to implement faith activity and nutrition in their faith-based organization, whether it's a church, a synagogue, a temple, it doesn't matter. So it's cross-denominational. We're not excluding anyone. It's just we want to go in. But the important part is that we are serving our priority population, which is the low-income African-American. When we wrote the grant, we had to demonstrate that we could use these funds to help us do the work. And we were clearly able to demonstrate that we have serious health issues in the African-American community, especially in low income, are just exponentially worse than in the rest of our world. And so that is the population we're working with. That's the population we want to reach. And when we do that, we lift everybody up.
The whole aim of all of this, of course, is to make the healthy choices the easy choices.
Correct.
And we talk about a culture of health, and we talk about healthy living being exactly that, living a lifestyle, not just something you're going to do because you want to cut 10 or 15 pounds between now and next week.
Exactly.
For a large percentage of Americans, that may be a bridge too far. How do we narrow that gorge?
Good question. So is this out of bounds if I ask you how'd you in your own life narrow that gorge?
Right. For me personally, I was in a place where I was very stressed at one point, and I had to make a decision on how I was going to handle that stress. And for me, I turned to exercise, and I started to see some results. I started to feel better. The aches and pains that I used to have, and at this point I'm in my late 30s or early 40s, just started to melt away. I didn't have those issues anymore, so I started to eat better. I by no means am a clean eater to this day. I'm very much a eat things in certain moderation,
right,
kind of approach, but I've come to appreciate the fact that I sleep better,
mm-hmm.
that I feel better,
yeah,
and I perform better as a husband, as a father, as a worker.
Yeah.
And so I'm not somebody that has to be convinced, but I know that I had to get to a pretty difficult part in my life to actually even consider it. How do we make it so people just say, oh, that sounds interesting, let's try that out?
So thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate it. And that just so much. So how do we create a culture of health? And so we do have to make the healthy choice easy. And that's what the REACH grant is absolutely all about. So where we can get corner stores to have healthier food choices that take SNAP and EBT and have more stops at the Forsyth for the Farm Truck 912, which is part of the farmer's market. So personally, as you're leading by example, I lead by example. You know, it's so when people know that they're going to eat at a table where Paul is sitting, unfortunately, they start either hiding their plate or saying, well, I knew you, I was sitting at your table, so I am, look what I got, and they point to it. And so there is that influence, but not everybody has Paula standing by to watch what they're putting on their plate, and that's obviously not going to happen on a, but I'm happy to. But then you become the influencer, Adam, and then the folks out there that are listening, you can become the influencer. Just go ahead and make a healthy choice. Somebody's going to probably notice that you didn't pick up fried chicken this time and got maybe baked chicken, or who knows? It's like you might be eating beans and rice as opposed to a animal protein, because you heard earlier I eat whole food, plant based. I don't eat meat anymore, and I'm healthy, and, you know, I don't think we talked about this, but last summer I did a 100-mile walk across Scotland over 7 days, and I did it. I'm 66, and so, and I feel good, and I feel like I could go do that again. I just walked a half marathon, and I do walk. I don't run, but walked a half marathon last weekend, so the Publix, which is always a lot of fun. So let's go back to something simple on, let's talk about physical activity first, because it really is. And everybody knows this number. Everybody knows that you're supposed to get out and do 30 minutes of physical activity every day, and that will extend your life. It'll make you feel better, and it really will. If you can do that with your family, it'll even be better. if you can do that in a green space, like go from your house to a nearby park. And Chatham County actually is fortunate to have a lot of green space nearby everybody's home. Practically everybody can walk is within a quarter to half a mile of a green space. And how long does it, and so if I said go walk a mile, everybody would be like, roll your eyes. It's like, no, I can't do that. But if I just said, let's go take a 20-minute walk, everybody like, okay, we can do that. Well, that's exactly the exact thing is, and that's a very, that's a stroll, 20 minutes to go for a mile. So you can take a, let's just say 15 minutes out and 15 minutes back with your family or just by yourself. And that is really just going to do wonders for your mental health, your physical health. And then just imagine if you shifted what you're eating. So, and I'll just shift back for the physical activity part too. You can do that too, like once a day. I mean, like sitting here, you know, it'd be easy to do a 5-minute walk in this big open space off to our right. And just get up and move, you know, just get up and do that. Even if we just stand up and do some steps in place, those kinds of things, because we tend to sit in front of computers a lot and get our work done. Everybody's heard sitting is the new smoking, and it could be. I just, you know, move enough where I'm not concerned about it. And there's all kinds of ways to shift that. So, but you don't want to be standing all day either, because that's not necessarily good for your health as well. So you need to be moving if you're up. So you can do it at work. You can do it at home. Those, you know, any place really you can do physical activity. And there's even places you just Google it. You can get physical activity in a chair if you like. You know, it's like there's exercises that chair-bound folks can do. Now, regarding food, this is probably the biggest thing. So number one, if you buy it, you're probably going to eat it, right? So if you're shopping, then the best thing to do is to don't buy it, because it, you know, as good as I am, if there's something that is at the house that isn't good for me, I might eat it. Yeah. I might. But if it's not there, guess what? There's not even an opportunity to do that. So first, start being selective about what you're bringing home. And this is not a cold turkey thing, because no one ever succeeds. I shouldn't say no one. That's too blanket. But basically, cold turkey on just shifting from drinking sugary beverages to water, you know, unless you just reach such a, you know, a hard spot that you're like, no, I'm not going to have one more sugary beverage starting now. Well, good for you if you can do that. But most people can't. Mm-hmm. Most people, it takes, you know, you've heard it, 21 days to create a habit.
Right. At least.
Yeah, at least. Exactly. So start by, if you're drinking a sugary beverage every day, or then just pick one day of the week. Okay, it's Thursday, so I'm not going to have a sugary beverage today. And then in a month from now, maybe make it Tuesdays and Thursdays. Just shift out of it, and you will find that you don't want it anymore. Like right now, sugary, I just, you know, I got puckered up just even thinking about a sugary beverage. It's like, ah, I don't want it. But that was not true, you know, 40 years ago, because they're good, they're addictive, they're all those things that the scientists have figured out. It's like our brain reacts to sugar, fat, and salt, and we want it. Well, what we have to do is find a way to not have it in front of us so we don't eat it. And so whoever's doing the grocery shopping, they have the biggest opportunity.
Yeah.
Because they can impact a whole family. And then when that family person goes to their workplace, then they're like going, you know, I wish you wouldn't. Why don't we, like, instead of donuts, if you get donuts every Friday, then, okay, one of you, it's like, even if it's just one of those Fridays, let's get oranges instead.
Yeah, a fruit platter or something.
Just a fruit platter. Something that is not, you know, all of that sugar. And I'm not here to put the donut companies out of business. I'm just here to say that we know, everybody knows that donuts aren't good for our health. Everybody knows that. It's like, it's not new news. It's just that, but we want them. And I used to eat them, you know, way a long time ago. I mean, I was right there with everybody, but now you couldn't pay me to eat a donut, you know, just period, because it's just, I know it's not good for me. And there's someone I know that started, you know, who's responsible for buying all that stuff for their office. And they said, you know, what I've started doing is I go to Sam's Club and I get bunches of fruit. And because fruit doesn't, you know, everybody's like, well, you know, that stuff spoils. Well, no, apples don't. Oranges don't. Bananas will go bad. But people like actually bananas. They go, you know, they'll go
pretty fast.
Exactly. Yeah. They do. Grapes, there's all kinds of choices. And so, and then you can buy those them big boxes of those cracker snacks, you know, just so you have stuff at work. Well, what they found out is that the fruit goes first because people do want it, and they will make the healthy choice because it's been made easy for them. So they actually choose that over those packaged, processed cracker snacks, which if you look on the back, you'll definitely see sugar included in those ingredients because that's why we eat them, because we that's what's in there, sugar, salt, fat. So don't buy it. The other part is if, let's just say you do have, if you put at your house, just like that, if you put the bowl of fruit out on the counter versus, you know, packaged Pop-Tarts or something, cookies, whatever. If you just keep that buried in the pantry and put the fruit out and you see the fruit, it's like then you're going to actually grab that. Same thing with water. You know, it's like just bury the other stuff, or better yet, you know, my perspective, throw it away. But don't buy it so you don't have it. And the same thing at work. And then from a big picture perspective, there's a lot of organizations that could really, you know, you could start healthy meeting guidelines at work. Actually, you go to the Healthy Savannah website and Google healthy meeting guidelines, you will find some suggestions and some recommendations that are based on really, you know, powerful spaces. So those are that's kind of where we are. You know, it's like we're at home, we're at work, we're at church, but have some folks commit to bringing something healthier, whether it's whatever, and it could be, there's a whole bunch of choices out there, whether it's vegetables or fruit or, you know, just if it's versus fried chicken, just grilled chicken, something that just makes the shift. Have, you know, somebody, the most likely person that's likelier to bring healthy choice in, ask them to do that. And you'll be surprised, you know.
Yeah, the strange thing is I don't think people understand the influence that they have on others. People are almost looking for an enabler. And if they see you do it, then all of a sudden it becomes more possible for
yes.
them to do it.
Yes.
And whether
yes.
that's family, friends, even strangers.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Yes. No, and that's exactly right, Adam. It's the message is lead by example, and people will follow. And then those folks will become leaders as well. And that's how we have this social movement we have now, have a culture of health. And just imagine, Adam, if our whole community would actually make a giant leap forward. Our people would be healthier. Our hospital systems would be there for those most critically in need around, you know, from some very, you know, acute situations like what it used to be before we ended up with this chronic disease burden that we have now that can be avoided. And it's not simple. I can say simply by eating better and being physically active, but we know it's a hard thing to do. We know that. And so, but let's make it easier, and you can. And I am a believer in the economy of supply and demand. And when we demand walking trails, then there will be walking trails. When we, and there will be less traffic on the road because people are doing more walking and biking, and we'll need less parking that everybody seems to be so excited about. And the same thing with all those food choices. 100 years ago, we didn't have 40 varieties of, you know, or 100 varieties of sugary laden cereals, right? We didn't have that. We didn't need it, but we have it now, and our country is very sick because of it. Our state is, our city is, our county is, but we actually can change that. And we call this the upstream look, because we're in a culture right now where we think things can be fixed by a pill. One of my button gets pushed every time on the commercial. It says, "Oh, eating pizza and you forgot to take your pill." I'm like, all right, well, if that's what it's going to do to you, why would you eat it in the first place? Why would you do that knowing that it's bad for you? The commercial says it's bad for you right up front. Take this instead. Well, no, it's like, let's have surgery. Let's do this. It's like, we've got to go back to where we do make healthy choices easy. And they were for me growing up. And I am so grateful for that, because I might not be here today, you know, because a lot of folks my age are in that cycle of how many pills they're taking, how many diseases they're managing. I don't have one disease. I'm not worried about it. I feel good. And I, you know, now I could get hit by a truck. It could happen, and that could work. You know, that could be what happens to me. And I'm still good with that. I don't want to. I'm going to try to be more alert, and what I eat and drink can actually
get on the walking trail. You don't have to worry.
That's right. Exactly. There you go. Thank you. So yeah, we can do it. And but we need everybody's help to do that. And so everybody out there listening, just pick one thing and make a difference. It'll make a difference in your life. You will feel it. It'll make a difference in your family's life and your coworkers' lives. And you can say, I'm part of this. I'm in. Let's do this.
Well, thank you for what you do for our community. And it was great to have you in as a difference maker. And we'll look forward to some future conversations.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much, Adam, for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
Let me thank our guest, Healthy Savannah's Paula Chrysler, as well as our presenting sponsor, the Savannah Economic Development Authority, a difference-making group in our community. Listen to new and archived episodes of Difference Makers wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, and Spotify. Recent programs have featured RBC Heritage Chairman Al Kennickel and the Savannah Music Festival's David Pratt. Difference Makers is a production of the Savannah Morning News and SavannahNow.com. And for a limited time, podcast listeners can take advantage of a special digital subscription offer. Get the first month free and pay just $7.99 a month after that. Just visit SavannahNow.com/digital-only offer. That's SavannahNow.com/digital-only offer. Thank you for listening.